I think that machine is as reticent to tape what I'm going to say as I am to say it. It's very interesting to me that Jesus starts this text with, I say to you who listen, or to you who hear, or to you who are listening. And it's interesting to me because the people who do the lectionary cycle, right, we do 3-year cycle, put this text, there's only one time we get to read it, and that's like really late in Epiphany. And that means if the Easter is any time early enough, we never get to this text. I look back, I've preached on this text one time in 27 years.
Wow.
It's tucked away. Intentionally or not, this text is tucked away. We should read this text. I think we should read this text every day. But we should read this text in the regular lectionary, don't you think?
Sure.
This is like right at the heart of what Jesus has to say and how Jesus lived. Right. And it's a hard one. Love your enemies. He's telling us basically to do what by definition we cannot do. Love your enemy. An enemy is who? The person you can't love. The person you don't love. The person who's out for you. Of course, we're not going to love our enemies. And yet, this is what Jesus is telling us. Now, I don't know how many of y'all read the newsletter this week? A few. Okay. Did you do your homework? There was homework in the newsletter. Some of you were smart not to open that newsletter. The homework was that in light of Jesus' saying, love your enemies, was to actually think of someone whom you consider an enemy, someone you're really struggling with, and be prepared to pray for their good on Sunday. Because when Jesus says, love your enemies, he's not saying, each of you individually love your enemy. He's saying, y'all love your enemy together. All y'all. Right. So it is not something that we're called to do heroically by ourselves. It's the church that can do this. Only in our gathering do we have what it takes to actually love our enemies. So, here's my homework. I gave you all homework. I did the homework too. And I found that the people that I am most frustrated with, most angry with, most upset about, are the people that I have seen on the internet, pastors of churches, who are talking about the love of Jesus, and they have a semi-automatic weapon in their hands while they're talking. Have y'all seen this yet? Okay, all right. I'm like, what? What is going on here, right? What is happening that somebody can, in the name of Jesus, talk about the love of Jesus and also embrace this semi-automatic weapon at their breast as they're speaking? I'm having a little trouble with this. and it's frustrating, and it makes me crazy to think that the reputation of Jesus would depend on some image like that. So I did some homework. And I did my best to pray for what is going on here. The first thing that I found was that these guys did not invent equating Jesus with weapons. All right? They didn't invent that. The church has a long and sad history of inventing such a thing. Most famously, I think, the Crusades. Remember Jesus says, pick up your cross and follow? Right? The idea being, Jesus is going to go to the cross, he's going to suffer for the sake of the world, and he's calling us also to go and suffer in some similar way. Right? To die to ourselves, our egos, our greed, our hostility towards others, to die to that in order to live. Pick up your cross, that's what that's talking about, right? And the church during the Middle Ages decided that to pick up your cross meant to pick up a sword which was in the shape of a cross. And that was considered picking up your cross and following. and to kill the infidels with the sword, with the cross. So instead of it being an instrument by which we are put to death, as in our baptisms, it became an instrument by which we put others to death. A cross, a sword looking like a cross, a semi-automatic weapon, about the same thing. That's the image. So, these guys didn't invent that. They inherited from some of the darker parts of our church history. So, and then I got even further and started to think this. I also don't want to love my enemies. I don't want to forgive them. I don't want to pray for their good. And we all have really good reasons for that, right? I mean, we all have sort of this semi-automatic weapon around our heart to protect it, because people have done bad things to us, and it's too hard to think about that and to think about forgiving that. They have hurt me deeply. Oh, worse, they have done something to my family. I'm never going to forget them. I'm never going to forgive that. I see myself as the person who stands over against that person. I don't want to lose that identity. Semi-automatic across my heart to protect it. We all are protecting ourselves from these dangerous words of Jesus. Are we not? So what are we supposed to do? There's a great... here's what we end up doing. We end up kind of saying, well, we'll just love the people who love us, who are around us, right? Our families, our closest kin, our closest neighbors. We'll love them. But what does Jesus say in all of this? He says, for those of you, so what if you love your family? Even sinners do that. That's a really low bar. Come on, right? You know? So you lend to somebody because you know you're going to get back with interest. What good is that to you? And it isn't really what credit is that to you. It is what grace is that to you. Isn't that interesting that they would translate credit when the word is grace? Is there any grace in just loving your own family who loves you, the people who love you? Is there any grace in that? Is there any grace in lending to people you know are going to give it right back to you? Is there any grace in that? Jesus seems to think, yeah, not so much. But love your enemy. Pray for those who despise you. That's what Jesus is calling us to. And we can't do it. We just can't do it. We can't do it as long as we're talking about the natural order of things. And speaking of order, there is this great conversation going on. I think it's really wonderful. Our Vice President Vance talked about, he was talking about like how our nation should take care of our own people first, and then, you know, like our own families, then our own communities, and then our own nation. And then if there's anything left over, other people. Right? And he was Catholic, and he was talking about the Ordo Amatis, Ordo, I forget what it is, but it's orders of love. The idea being, you start at the closest in the center, and then you move out as you can. Right? And the people in concentric circles should just kind of go out like that, and that's how your love should go. First, at home. And again, Thomas Aquinas and Augustine say something like that stuff, but it's really a lot more subtle and a lot different than what Vance is thinking or understanding. But nevertheless, he put that out there, and I thought that was just really fascinating, and there's all kinds of conversation about it. But whether Augustine said it or whether Aquinas said it, we have Jesus' words today. Listen to those words. Right? He's not talking about first you love this person and then you love these, and then he's not talking about concentric circles. He is talking about jumping over all of that and saying, no, the characteristic of this movement is love your enemies. Love those who are outside of the circle completely. That's the mark of the Christian life. It is the mark of the Christian life. Why? Because that's what God's doing. Loving his enemies. That would be you and me.
Ouch.
Yeah, ouch. But woohoo, too. That's what God's like. God is loving the unlovable. And calling us to do the very same. We only can do it. If Jesus just said, Alexander Schmemann said, if Jesus just gave us this commandment, but knew we couldn't do it, that would be mean, an awful commandment. But as it is, Jesus gives us the capacity to love our enemies because he gives us in the gathering, in hearing of the word, and in receiving of his own body and blood, gives us the very spirit of love that Jesus embodies. So that we become the body of Christ and the spirit of Christ, able to do what God does, to love our enemies. So this is why we gather. We are gathering so that we may receive that love which allows us to go beyond our own capacity for love, which is pretty small, really, to think about. To love all. And so we are here, and so we are given this love. It's breathed into us in the words, in the scriptures, in the preaching, in the Eucharist, in the passing of the peace. So you realize that the passing of the peace isn't just like, hello, how you doing? This is like, we have received this incredible gift of God, this gift of divine love. Here, let me share it with you, and let us do it together. And if we're really being risky, we'll go and share that same peace to somebody we don't know, a stranger who could be an enemy. So we practice giving away this divine love, even to people who could be enemies, until that day when we might be called very profoundly to give God's love to our enemies. To give forgiveness to our enemies. It isn't easy. So Desmond Tutu and his wife, Full, I think that's how you pronounce her name, wrote this book, The Book of Forgiveness. And you have to remember that he started the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, which invited people who perpetrated horrible violence against the people to come forward and to confess publicly what they did and to show contrition. And if they did that, they would receive amnesty. They wouldn't be prosecuted for their crimes. Lots of people were invited. A very small portion of them actually came. And a smaller portion than that actually really showed contrition as they confessed. Well, here's the thing. It was just incredibly, excruciatingly difficult for the victims of those violent crimes. They sat in the courtrooms and they heard these confessions. And it had to be hard for those who were trying to make confession as well. But in this hard, hard thing, there came upon the nation a a semblance of peace, reconciliation, so that it was not, you were my enemy, now I'm going to go, you attack me, now I have power, I'm going to attack you. But that the nation could be reconciled. So, Desmond Tutu sat and listened to a whole bunch of these things, and it was excruciatingly hard. He and his wife wrote a poem, a prayer. And the prayer is like this. And I think this really touches, it's great because we heard the intro, down to the river to pray, right? We really want to pray, and maybe we want to love our enemies on some level. I don't know, do we? Not really, huh? Yes, we want to, we'd love to, we're called to it, and in the spirit of Jesus, in our better moments, we do. It's hard. So this is the prayer. It's called the prayer before the prayer. I want to be willing to forgive, but I dare not ask for the will to forgive in case you give it to me. And I am not yet ready. I am not yet ready for my heart to soften. I am not yet ready to be vulnerable again. Not yet ready to see that there is humanity in my tormentor's eyes. Or that the one who hurt me may also have cried. I am not yet ready for the journey. I am not yet interested in the path. I am at the prayer before the prayer of forgiveness. I suspect a lot of us are there. So I talked about our vice president quoting St. Augustine. One thing I do know that St. Augustine said is this. To not forgive, to not offer our love to our enemy is like us taking poison and expecting the person that we are not forgiving or loving to die. So thanks be to God that we can gather and we can receive the Spirit of God, the Spirit of love that Jesus embodies. We don't have to keep ingesting this poison. Come to this place and we receive what we need to love, to forgive, and to pray for our enemies until that day when we are enemies no more and we refuse to be an enemy.